The other day, I was driving home from school, picking up the kids from school, and Joey brought to my attention the fact that he doesn't like something one of his teachers does, and that is the fact that she makes them follow along when they're reading aloud with their finger, and he finds that irritating. It gave me a chance to tell him what I learned while I was in college, is that teachers are not always right, but if you want a good grade, you give them what they want.
Amen.
You know, it's also brought to my attention, and I brought to his attention, that it's a way that God has of testing us. Because we're expected to obey. Now, I told Joey there are ways to test what his teacher is doing to see if it's okay. There are times when you don't want to do what somebody's doing because it could hurt you, could cause you to die, or it might not fit with what you've biblically been taught. Then I went on to explain to him that not only does that work for deciding whether you should do what the teacher says, but it also works in other areas of your life. Take marriage, for instance. There are going to be things, like I had to get used to when I got married, like I was adamant. I used to have renters in my home, and I was adamant that when they left in the morning, they didn't leave dirty dishes in the sink. Well, when I got married, I found out I better learn to accept that. And if you put it to the test, I wasn't going to get hurt. I wasn't going to die from it. And it wasn't biblically incorrect. So it passed the test, and we live with that in our home. And I understand that in the morning, things get rushed. Okay, and that's why it happens. So, but it works with other areas in your life. That's just an example. Now, we don't have a lot of teenagers in here today, but I'm going to be using teenagers as an example today. Part of it is you get more out of the sermon when you can relate to it. The other reason is because I've worked with teenagers for many years, and I enjoy working with teenagers. And the third reason is because everyone in this room at one time was a teenager, and you can all relate. Okay? So it's not to pick on teenagers today. It is just to prepare you that we'll use the teenage instances as something that we have that as an example in some cases. Today we're celebrating, like the rest of the world, many of the churches in the world are celebrating this being the last Sunday of the church calendar year. And what do they celebrate on that day? Christ the King. He's the King of Kings. He's the King of the universe. He's the King of everything. And that is what is celebrated on the last year of what many consider to be the traditional church calendar year. Next year, we'll go into Advent, and you'll start preparing for Christmas. So with that being said, as we celebrate Jesus as our King, what does that mean to us? Did you ever stop and think about that? You know, how does placing Jesus in that position of King affect our lives? It's kind of difficult for us here in the United States because, you see, we fired our King about 240 years ago. Unlike Israel, which demanded a king back in the Old Testament, we got rid of the king in our leadership in our country when we declared our independence. So we live under what they call a republic. What does that mean? That means that we elect our governing body. Now you'll notice I didn't call us a democracy like so often the media has kind of come to say we live in a democracy. We don't really live in a democratic country. Because a democratic country is one that they overthrow the leadership. And we don't do that here. We elect our leadership to govern us. So we living, see, you learned something today. We are in a republic. We're not in a democracy. Okay. So here we have a situation where we're under a president. And unlike under the president, who is supposed to uphold the law rather than create the law, a king is an authoritarian. He creates the law. All right, I know this is a little tough after this week when we talked about, all week we were hearing about the power, of executive power that our president is exercising, but there is a difference. And a king is an authoritarian. He does make the law. Okay? So that's what we got to understand when you start talking about a king. Now, as we turn to our first scripture today, we're going to look at John 8:32, where Jesus says in John 8:32, "You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." Okay. Most of us probably dismiss this logic just a little bit, because isn't God all about rules and regulations? If that's the case, then freedom and God probably go together about as good as oil and water. You know, they really don't live well together. They don't mix. Instead, we're striving for a life with as little authority or no authority in order to find freedom. But the fact really is that our lives are influenced by how we respond to authority. Think about that for a second. It's how we respond to authority. In fact, how we respond to God as an authority will directly affect how we respond to those in authority over us on a daily basis. For teenagers, this includes parents and teachers. It's tempting to disregard authority and to avoid attaching significance of our attitude and response to it. Now, I can say this extends out to adults, too, because we all have bosses. And how we respond to those over us will directly affect how we respond to the law governing our nation. It also, how we respond to those enforcing it. Now, again, we can turn to the news this week when we're thinking about that. The response to enforcement agencies will determine our standing in society. Why do I say we can turn to that this week in our news events? Because take a look at Missouri in the St. Louis area, where they've been preparing all week to demonstrate, no matter what the response is by the indictment or when the indictment comes down by the grand jury in that police officer incident they had there. All week, they've already made up their mind that we're going to demonstrate. We don't care what the authorities say. You know, this all comes down to affecting our intimacy with God. As well as how much authority that we're going to be entrusted with in our lives. Now, where does that come from? Well, do you remember the little passage where when Matthew, in Matthew, I believe I got it up there. Nope. I don't have it. There it is. The master said, "Well done." When the servant came back and he had done what he was supposed to do, he said, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful with the few things I put you in charge of. So now what will I do? I'll give you many more things." But the one little servant who went away and just buried the money, he didn't come away in such good standing with the Lord. See, what do we mean though when you'll get more authority? Well, think about it. Think about the things that authority affects in our lives. Marriage is ultimately an authority issue. Parenthood is an authority issue. Discipleship's an authority issue. And becoming spiritually influential in the lives of others is thus an authority issue. We'll look at that a little bit further down the line here. As we see how the authority issue influences our lives in the many areas, we'll better understand the importance of submitting to the authorities God has placed over us. The result is really going to be true freedom. Let's diffuse this idea that God is all rules, okay? That was the first thing that I was struck with. I mean, God is rules. It doesn't go together. So let's see if we can put that one to rest. And we'll do so by taking a look at the story of Adam and Eve. They were two of the freest people in the world. Think about it. When they lived in the Garden of Eden, they lived under one rule. One thou shalt not rule. Remember, the Garden of Eden was paradise. This was God's idea of what this world should be about. One rule. So, let's lay to rest that God thinks the ideal world is about rules. Who ruined that? Satan came along and he convinced Adam and Eve that, you know what? You could have freedom if you just break the rule. The premise of the decision was rebellion brings freedom. Well, that kind of worked for the students in West Bend at their high school this week. They rebelled and they were given freedom from school for a few days. That wasn't too bright. Didn't really work. Rebellion is an attitude, and it's an act of disobeying God. Rebellion resulted in their losing their freedom, really, because once they were put out of the garden, what happened? They had to work for their food. They couldn't live in the garden. And women had to deal with pain during childbearing. So we didn't really see freedom come from that rebellion. See, the world is full of rules now. All around us we have rules. All as a result of rebellion. The principle to maximum freedom is found under God's authority. So the idea that freedom is a world without authority is a lie. And it actually robs us of our freedom. Let me introduce you to Bobby. Bobby is a teenager and his parents have set some boundaries. Bobby is not supposed to hang out with people that drink or drink himself. Okay, so what happened with Bobby? Bobby decided to go to a party. He broke the rules. On the way home, Bobby rides home with a friend. The friend is the driver, and the driver hits a van and kills a mother and three kids. So what's the result of this freedom situation? Well, as we look at the screen, we see that Bobby lost a friend. He also played a part in the death of four people. Families were devastated by his freedom. He broke the law, drinking as a minor. He'll probably be fined, so there'll be some financial freedom there. He'll be free of that money. He may lose his driving privileges. He lost the trust of his parents. And he lost the trust of others, probably some of his friends. So that didn't work out too well. How about with marriage? Let's take a look at marriage again. When you get married, you vow to stay married to your best friend, your lover, your partner for life, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. And then you decide you want freedom. See, you've committed by vows to these rules. And one of the rules is you aren't going to cheat on your spouse. So what happens when that happens? Well, let's see. We've got probably loss of marriage, loss of your best friend, loss of your lover, loss of your friendships with your family's, your spouse's family, and with probably some of those friends that come along with your spouse. Loss of time with your children, if not your children altogether. There'll probably be some fiscal loss there too, because usually you split the money when you divorce. And you might lose the home and some other property that goes with it. So, was the freedom worth it? Takes us back to Jesus says, the truth sets us free. God is the truth. And under his authority, we gain maximum freedom by living underneath his authority and his rules. And breaking the rules or having no rules doesn't really bring you freedom. One of the difficulties in being a teenager was the period of time in our lives, and will be the period of time in your lives, when you're going from few freedoms because you've lived under the parents' umbrella and the umbrella of the school, and having really little responsibility, to that time in your life when you'll have a lot more freedom, but you're going to gain a lot of responsibility as well. And now, as adults, after you've been there, transitioning, we kind of would like to go back when times were simpler. Because look at how it happened. As life goes on, who are you responsible to listen to and under the authority of when you were 2 years old? Pretty much just mom and dad, right? Then you went to school. Now who do you have? Are you under the authority of? Kids, you have to listen to teachers, right? And mom and dad. And then you move on to high school and you get involved in other things. Maybe you have a job, now you have a boss. Maybe you're on the sports team, now you've got a coach. So, as life goes on, what do you find is that you have more authority figures to answer to than ever before. Doesn't get easier. But you know, the human tendency is not to want anyone to tell us to do anything. We think that's freedom. But the truth is, it isn't going away. And we need to learn to live with it or lose the freedoms we have. In Matthew 8, we see the story of the Roman soldier. He recognized about the authority that Jesus had. Now, a centurion used to give orders. And the men below him knew that he was operating under the authority of the Roman government. And as that centurion sat there and watched Jesus as he was healing people, he realized that Jesus was under an authority too. As he saw him work to eliminate disease and demons, he realized that he had to be under some kind of divine authority to employ the kind of power he did. So we see illustrated another principle there. To have authority, you must be under authority. Jesus was under God's authority, and thus he was under authority. If we want to have authority, we must learn to live under authority. And that's not easy. That leads us to the truth about God's ultimate authority. As we look ahead to what Paul had to say in his letter to the Romans, he said that everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities. There's no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. And consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God instituted. And those who do so will bring judgment upon themselves. Now, Peter, he added to that. He says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority instituted among men, whether to the king as the supreme authority, or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong, and to commend those who do right. Those two principles right there, those two passages, are the backbone to the ultimate authority principle. If God is ultimately behind all authority, then authority issues are ultimately spiritual issues. We cannot pursue intimacy with God and ignore conflicts with authority. In fact, we cannot be right with God and out of sorts with the authorities God has placed over us. Now, as I was writing this sermon last week, I got to a line I felt God was having me put into it, and I was like, oh boy, I don't know if I want to put that in there. But here's what God gave me. And I believe it was God who gave it to me, because as the week went on, he gave me more. That includes right here in this church, where God has put us under the shepherding authority of Pastor Larry. We must understand that not every authority is godly, but God has established every authority. Now, that's strange to go from Pastor Larry to that, but I think this, we're going to come back to that what I had, because I told you God gave me more on that. But we must understand that not every authority is godly. And I'm not saying Pastor Larry is ungodly, okay? The Bible is full of illustrations of how God has used ungodly leaders to fulfill his purposes. The crucifixion of Christ is a perfect example. It's probably the paramount example in Scripture. Another was when, in the Old Testament, when God's judgment comes down on Israel through the Babylonians. We cannot deal successfully with unjust or ungodly authorities until we submit to God's control over all authorities. The issue that changes from what, the issue then changes from what is being asked to be done to who is doing the asking. Let me say it again. When someone tells you what to do, the issue is not what, but who. We have a tendency to evaluate a rule or a request based upon its merit. Take Joey's teacher, for example, again. You know, it makes sense for us, if it makes sense for us or fits our plan and doesn't make us uncomfortable, then we comply. But if we think it's unreasonable and doesn't make sense and gets in our way and kind of messes up our plans, well, then we think it's okay to just disobey. To ignore or rebel against an authority is to rebel against God. Our attitude and response to the authority in our lives are ultimately our attitude and response to God. We cannot be in rebellion against a God appointed authority and be in fellowship with God at the same time. In this church, Here I am. I'm back to what I've been given this week. In this church, we must let Pastor Larry lead. When you searched for a pastor, you didn't pray to God to guide you in your selecting a pastor. Let's see. You did a pastor. Didn't you pray to God to guide you to a pastor who could lead this church? I would guess that's what happened. You didn't ask for a puppet so you could pull his strings and get him to go the way you want him to go instead of God's way. I want you to see what passage God gave me to confirm that this message was to be delivered this weekend. Turn to Deuteronomy 1:23. You won't see it on the screen because I put this presentation together a week ago. So we have to go to the Bible to see it. If you turn to Deuteronomy 1:23, it says there, I'm starting partway into the verse 23. I selected 12 of you, one man from each tribe. They left and went up into the hill country and came to the valley of Eshkol and explored it, taking with them some of the fruit of the land. They brought it down to us and reported, it's a good land that God, the Lord our God, is giving us. But you were unwilling to go up. You rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. You grumbled in your tents and said, the Lord hates us. So he brought us out of Egypt to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us. Where can we go? Our brothers have made our hearts melt in fear. They say, the people are stronger and taller than we are. The cities are large and the walls up to the sky. We even saw the Anakites there. Then I said, do not be terrified. Do not be afraid. The Lord your God is going before you. He'll fight for you as he did for you in Egypt before your eyes and in the wilderness. Then you saw how the Lord your God carried you as a father carries his son all the way you went until he reached this place. In spite of this, you did not trust the Lord your God, who went ahead of you on your journey by fire at night and by cloud during the day to search out places for you to camp and to show you the way you should go. When the Lord heard what you said, he was angry and solemnly swore, no one from this evil generation shall see the good land I swore to give your ancestors, except Caleb. Notice how the Israelites rejected the leadership of Moses, the plan to enter the promised land. This past year, Pastor Larry spent 9 months preparing this land, this church, to help plant a church. And you rejected it. Now, if you look further, you'll see how God responded. And God doesn't change. That's all I want to say about it, because I walked with him through that up to that point, and I felt sorry for him. Now, let's talk to teenagers again. If you're rebelling against your parents, you'll have a hard time feeling close to God. You can recommit yourself over and over. Even as adults, we do this. Recommit yourself over and over again. But it's going to fade. That closeness will fade until you deal with the attitude, with the authorities in your life. In the case of teens, parents. To seek God's will while living in rebellion is futile. To get things right with God, kids, you have to have it right with mom and dad. That simple act of submission to authority can serve as a defining moment which changes your life. And if you don't believe rebellion has consequences, you can check your instruction manual of life. Jonah chose to rebel. What was the result? David was rebellious in his decision to be adulterous for his adulterous relationship with Bathsheba. It resulted in murder, illegitimacy, death, and war. Resisting God's authority is resisting control of the one who loves you most and has your best interest in mind. Rebellion against unjust authority has consequences. You know, we've been talking mostly about just authority, but rebelling against unjust authorities has consequences as well. Jesus didn't even allow it. He stopped Peter in the garden from rebelling against his arrest. He didn't encourage rebellion. How should the students at West Bend High School have handled their situation with their unjust authority this week, or at least what they felt was unjust? The Bible explained it pretty simply. First, they addressed their superiors directly with their intentions not to obey. Then they accepted the consequences. Daniel had a wonderful example. Daniel 1, now this is pretty small, you might have to turn to it. Daniel 1, 3 through 17. Daniel was facing the command of a king that went against God's law. So what does he do? Well, he makes his intentions clear. Then he signaled his willingness to accept the consequences. But Daniel went one step further. He even suggested an alternative to the king's edict, which was agreeable to those in authority over him. Another option is to appeal to a higher authority. That was done in Acts by Paul. He modeled the strategy when he appealed to the Romans. The point is, there are ways to stand up for our convictions without rebelling against our authorities. Submission is a quality that is pleasing to God. By definition, it is simply obedience to authority. It's a crucial element in our spiritual growth. In fact, James, sometimes I don't know how that happens, but all of a sudden you guys are seeing something that's ahead of what I'm talking about. Maybe when I put it down, I bump it. Anyway, James says that the wisdom's coming from God and is submissive. And then he goes on to challenge us to submit ourselves then to God. In the original Greek, this imperative command calls for an immediate action to root out the sinful attitude of pride. Obedience is the submission to God's authority and the authorities he established. One final reason often overlooked for putting a proper perspective on submitting to authority is that it influences the influence one has on others is affected. In the mind of most close friends, God can't be all that great if supposedly Christian students won't submit to him. Peter cautioned us. He says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority. And when we do, we silence that ignorant talk of foolish men. When we respond properly to authority, we counter the false charges many make against Christians. And this conveys the gospel to unbelievers. So, is Jesus your King? Are you submitting to Him? Or are you withholding that authority for your own good, for your own purpose? Do you want all to say? Are you putting God above everything else? Are you loving others? Can you say you're loving them if you're not sharing the gospel with them? And if you're not praying them into the kingdom? On this last Sunday of the church year, let us see how you did with the challenge I presented to you back in January, the first calendar month of this year. Do you remember the joy kits? They were a little packet of almond joy bars. How many of you used that or a similar tool to love your neighbors during this past year? As you prepare this week to enter the new church year, I have a new challenge for you. I'm going to close this morning, and instead of having a time where I pray for you, when they come up and they start singing like they do, I want to give you the opportunity to bring anything that the Lord convicted you of this morning up here to the altar and lay it down before the Lord. Just bow down and lay it down for Him.